You're listening to the ModernDogTrainer.net podcast, bringing you the best industry tips and topics for professional dog trainers worldwide. Now here are your hosts, Ines Gesho and Kat Camplin.
Good evening. Welcome to the Modern Dog Trainer. My name is Ines McNeil, and I'm the founder of the Modern Dog Trainer blog and podcast.
And I'm Kat Camplin, contributor to the blog and co-host for the Modern Dog Trainer podcast.
So today in this episode, we're going to talk to Abigail Curtis from the International Dog Parkour Association. Abigail, welcome, and go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a sort of reformed dog trainer. I don't know if reformed is the right word. I didn't actually start out my life thinking I was going to become a dog trainer. I'm actually by trade a veterinarian. Graduated about 3 years ago now, and sort of stumbled into dog training via a circuitous route. I started a camp for kids and teenagers and their dogs. And through that, I ended up getting really interested in dog training and the people part of dog training. Working with teenagers doesn't give you a lot of slack on your people skills. And so then became interested in dog training and then all of the different things that result from that. So that's me.
That's very cool. So you're a co-founder of the International Dog Parkour Association. Yes. What is Canine Parkour and how did it come about?
So dog parkour is sort of an outgrowth of Karen and I's experiences. About, I want to say, 5 or 6 years ago now, we were spending time with a friend in Pennsylvania, and she was like, oh, there's this parkour thing. And we're like, oh, that's interesting. And then looked it up, and luckily for us, in our city that we were living in, there was a very, very nice parkour organization, human parkour organization. So we decided that sounded really cool, really interesting, but we weren't in good enough shape to do parkour. That's what we decided. We weren't in good enough shape. So we were going to spend all winter getting in shape, and then we were going to go to like one of their intro level classes when winter was over. And then one day, while I was actually in vet school, one of my lunchbox fortune cookies said, many possibilities are open to you, work a little harder. Which was basically the fortune cookie telling me that I was lazy. And so we were awesome. Like, it was the first day it had gotten above freezing in like 2 weeks. And there was a parkour class. I'm like, you know, we should just go. So we went and we were late and it was dark and we had trouble finding them. But immediately we were hooked. We had one of the instructors took us and we were doing things on railings and walls and all of these awesome things. And we were immediately hooked on it. And so we started going, gosh, almost 3 to 5 times a week. We were going to park practices. Wow. And we really liked the aspects of it that weren't just, neither of us are what we consider risk takers, thrill seekers, that kind of thing. But we really liked the different aspects and the mentality that parkour brought to all of our training and that kind of thing. Karen had been a pretty competitive runner in college, and I had done a lot of horse showing and that kind of thing. And so we liked the competitive within yourself aspect of it. And because the organization we were training with had lots of ties to the European and French founders of the sport, which is where it really started, was over there. Started in France with a bunch of what's called the Yamakaze, and they sort of founded parkour, as you might say, and spread the philosophy then into Europe and that kind of thing with a couple documentaries. And now we had the ability, the organization we work with brought those founders over, and we had the ability to train with them and get their ideas with how the philosophy of parkour and all of these different aspects, and it really made us love the sport. And concurrently with that, we take our dogs on walks. Both of us live in the city but aren't city people. Neither of us grew up in a city. But we were seeing all the different aspects of the environment around us, and we were seeing it in new and different ways, and saw that our dogs could also interact with all of these things in very similar ways to what we were doing. And so it was sort of a natural outgrowth of the training we were doing to open what we typically call like your parkour eye. You see new things that you never saw before. Okay. And we're now applying that to our dogs. So we never seen different ways to interact with the environment. We've done some things like, you know, everyone's put their dog on a bench or that kind of thing. But the more systematic and dedicated way of looking at all of these different things. So that's basically how canine parkour started. And I don't think I actually answered your question in all of that, what canine parkour is. So now I'll tell you what canine parkour is. And it's just interacting with the environment around you and having your dog interact with the environment around you in new and unique ways in order to build confidence, skill, strength, flexibility, all of these different aspects that we want to build in our dog. And just using the environment around us in new and unique ways.
Wow, that is really, really cool.
That is cool. And there are specific activities, I mean, prescribed activities with the sport, as opposed to just, oh, you're going to go touch a tree. You have actual tasks that need to be done, right?
Right. Okay. Right. So we typically say it's unders, overs, through, around. We have what's called a tic-tac. Some people in like the Frisbee world call it a rebound. We take it from the parkour world, which is basically just bouncing off of different things. And then a bunch of strength and conditioning things to go along with that as well.
Cool. So obviously strength and conditioning would be a benefit of parkour, but what are some of the other benefits for both the humans and the dogs?
So we see lots of confidence benefits. So we very much emphasize the parkour journey is what we call it, that your parkour doesn't look like anyone else's parkour. So my parkour, when I'm doing human parkour, I'm never going to jump off of a building or, you know, do all of these crazy things that you see on YouTube videos of parkour. But that doesn't make my parkour any different than anyone else's. It's my own personal journey within the sport. And that's a big thing the French founders really, really emphasize. They love doing workshops for your less experienced people because they like emphasizing that it's your journey and your parkour. Mm-hmm. And so we see a lot of confidence benefits with dogs because they learn how to manage their own fears and their own worries. And their people, as a result of going through this journey, realize that they need to meet their dog where they're at. Where they're currently at. So maybe they're too afraid to put 4 feet on this thing. And so they ask, hey, can you actually just nose touch it? Or can you put 2 feet on it? And that's great. That's awesome. You're still having success. And so we see lots of confidence because both the dog and the people learn how to have this communication with each other about where they're currently at and what things they're comfortable doing. And with that grows lots of confidence we tend to see. So that's one of the big ones, is a nice confidence boost. Another one is, it's like you said, the strength and those kind of things. That's a really important part, the conditioning. And then simply just getting out into the environment. We see reactive dogs. It's a very reactive dogs friendly sport because you can do it anywhere. And they're getting out into the environment, but we're not forcing them, in quotation marks, them to work with their reactivity. We're simply going out and exposing them to the environment and having them do these fun and exciting things, and they're getting this nice, positive, conditioned emotional response to being outside in these different environments. Right. So very, very dog reactive and people reactive friendly sport.
If I can just ask a real quick question. Yeah. As far as like the benefits for the humans, what have you seen so far?
So what we love about this sport for the human aspect is you're getting out and doing things outside. Mm-hmm. And you're getting a lot more exercise. You're having to explore new parks, look at different areas. And you're having to get out and move and do things with your dog. So it's a super good benefit from that regard.
I mean, do you see people's like maybe handling skills grow as they participate?
Oh, yeah. And because we emphasize spotting so much, their leash handling skills also get much better because we have specific exercise to practice, you know, how to use your leash and all of these things. And you have to keep your leash sort of, you know, gathered up. Yeah. And you get very good at figuring out exactly how you should position yourself or move like a treat or something like that to get the dog to do what you'd like. Mm. Karen and I often joke that through, you know, the years we've been doing parkour, we do workshops with shelter dogs pretty frequently. And we always joke that we're able to, with our fake treat, you know, just the no treat in your hand, just making your hand look like you have a treat.
Yeah.
We can get the dogs to do things often that the handler, because they don't have the skill yet, aren't able to get the dog to do with a real treat. and it's simply because you find those like half inch differences in where you position things and where you position yourself and those kind of things. And we see people's skills in that regard grow pretty dramatically as they're practicing all of these things.
That's awesome.
That's really awesome.
All right. And then the other, another question I had was, how did the idea of a non-competitive titling option for the sport come about?
Yeah, so as we were exploring this dog parkour thing, we had resisted for a long time doing anything title related or anything even structured in any way, because of the nature of parkour. So by its definition, as the founders want it to be practiced, it's non-competitive. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, your own personal journey and all of these different things. And they very much realize that competition, especially in the parkour vein, is where injuries start to happen. You know, as soon as you add a little bit of competition, now it's who can jump higher and longer and faster and do fancy tricks and all of these things.
That makes sense.
So we were very much wanting to stick with the ideals that the founders wanted the sport to have. So we didn't want to add any of these sort of competitive aspects to it at all. And we struggled for a long time with how to structure or even to have a structure to it at all.
Right.
And what we realized was that, one, if we didn't do it, it was, we're getting to the point that someone was going to do it and we weren't going to be happy with how it was done. And two, that we could develop a way to have that same spirit of parkour with everything. It just took us a long time to come up with, you know, exactly how we were going to structure it so that, one, it really emphasized safety aspects and a structured way of practicing so that it was safe and that by the time you were to the advanced levels, you had all the skills you needed and the strength and the confidence and those kind of things. And it was non-competitive and people could really take their own journey as they went through. So that was why we ended up coming up with the structure for the organization that we had. We really wanted it to be non-competitive, but still fun and still very challenging, especially at those upper levels.
Yeah, I love that you really, you know, took a conscious effort to stay true to, you know, the original goals of the, you know, original parkour founders. And brought that along into the dog world as well. I know dog sports can be very highly competitive, so and how do you explain how the titling works for the parkour stuff?
So the way the titling works is there's four different sort of standard levels is how I consider them. There's a training level that's open to any dog at any age. It's an optional level. You don't have to do the training level. It's very simple. Very low impact movements, very, they can do it at slow speeds, at ground level, there's very low risk involved. This is our only option allowed to dogs under 18 months of age. We really wanted to make sure that people weren't training their parkour things too early, that they were keeping it really safe, really low impact for your young puppies. So we made it an 18-month cutoff for any of the upper levels. Simply because we wanted to make sure before we were doing anything that could have impact or any of those kind of things, that their growth plates were closed and it was super safe for them. So that's our training level. And then there's three levels above that. There's novice, intermediate, and expert. Each of them have somewhere between 12 and 15 different skills. Lots of ons, unders. We have a creativity aspect, which is a certain number of different behaviors with one obstacle, and then a sequence, which is different behaviors with different obstacles. And what that, how that works is you take videos of your dog doing that specific skill, and once you have collected all of the videos for that specific level, you submit them to us. We review them. We were reviewing them for whether they met the standard, whether they were the correct size. And our sizes are all based on the size of the dog. And we didn't want to have any sort of standardized, you know, a 2-foot jump, because that's not the same for a tiny Chihuahua versus, you know, a German Shepherd.
Right.
So they're all based on the size of the dog. So all of the obstacle sizes are based on the size of your dog. And which gets interesting when you get to the extreme levels, you know, a tiny little 7-pound Chihuahua, it's hard to find things sometimes small enough. And your big dog, sometimes it's hard to find things tall enough. So you submit those to us, and we review the videos for safety and meeting standards and all of those things. And then if all of your videos met the standard, then we send back to you a congratulations. You got a, you know, you earned this title level, and then you'll get in the mail a certificate saying you've earned this title, posted on the website and all of those other things.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then in addition to that, we have my favorite actual title that you can earn in parkour. It's the championship title. It's open to any dog who's had a novice has a novice title. So it's very different than your typical dog sport championship. You don't have to go all the way through your expert title before you're eligible for your championship. And the championship title really emphasizes the journey you and your dog have taken through parkour. It has lots of different aspects, like showing a time when you respected your dog's decision not to take an obstacle.
Okay.
And then showing a time when, oh, now your dog has had more training and has more confidence, and now they have taken that obstacle, and they did so confidently and competently. And different, you know, we require you to go to a bunch of different places and new behaviors, and we have you have to come up with new behaviors that aren't on any of the title lists, really emphasizing that creativity and uniqueness that we love about the sport.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty intense level, but it is open to any dog who has their novice title. So it's very friendly for your older dogs and all those things.
Okay.
There are dogs, and I tell people this, I have a dog who would never be able to get an expert title in parkour. One of my dogs, that's just not something that she's capable of. But she could very easily get a championship title, because it's all about her parkour and our journey together mm-hmm. in parkour, which is why we wanted the championship title to be structured in that way, that it's really open to almost any dog.
Wow. That's awesome. Really awesome. I mean, the fact that you took the time to really lay out such a structured plan that's also accessible to, you know, all kinds of different people and dogs, that's really neat.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and just kind of a side question I had was, how long, let's say somebody, you know, gets started tomorrow, how long does it take for them to progress maybe through all of those, you know, titles?
So it really depends on where the dog is starting out. So your dogs mm-hmm. that are very, very competent in all of their dog sports, they've done a lot of agility and they've done a lot of these different things and have a lot of confidence.
Right.
They can progress through, I would say, the training, the novice and intermediate level. It depends, because it's not just about your dog skill. You have to develop your parkour eye. So we have lots of people saying, I can't possibly find, you know, X, Y, and Z obstacle. And the best part is when I see in a video and I'm like, oh, right behind you in the background of that video is that obstacle you were looking for. Simply because it's partly on the human's ability to see all of these different obstacles.
For sure.
But usually within about 6 months, a very competent dog that starts with a good base level of strength and conditioning and confidence can get through those first two levels. The expert level is much, much more difficult. We had someone taking classes with us for 2 years before she had enough
oh, wow.
videos and strength and everything to get through that expert title. And she started with a dog that is very, very good. I would say he's a naturally talented parkour dog.
awesome.
So it took her about 2 years.
Interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So a lot of the upper level behaviors look like they could cause injury. There's some balance skills and ricocheting off of items.
Right.
So how is safety incorporated into the behaviors and training and handling?
Yeah. So safety is one of the things, like the most important things, that we really, really emphasize. One of the founding fathers of parkour, a lot of their sayings are, be strong, to be useful, and to be and to last. So they go through the, you know, we don't want to just be able to do all these big jumps and all these crazy stunts and then be broken by the time we're 40. They want to really build that base level of strength and the proprioception and the coordination and all those things, so that all of these big things that a lot of them are doing aren't actually detrimental. Their body has adapted and, you know, is used to those things, and they've done it in a systematic and progressive way so that it's not actually dangerous for them. And so we took that same philosophy when we were doing and designing our titles, in that we have different sort of tests for dogs that we make sure as they're progressing through the titles that they have the skills that are needed and the strength and coordination. So one of the hardest things, and you can ask anyone who's done some of these titles, one of the skills I think in the entire list is the intermediate in. So it's a very tall, very precise in that the dogs have to be able to do. They have to jump into a very, very precise area. And the reason this one is so precise and we're very strict about it and it's very, very difficult is because we want to make sure and know that the dogs have the precision skills and the coordination and the body awareness to be able to do that before we then go ask them to do a skill that does involve risk. So one of the expert level skills is a balance on an object that has a 6-foot drop on one side. And so we want to know and make sure that the dogs have all of these skills before we then go ask them to do the skills in a dangerous way. We want the dog and the person to be so confident and competent at everything that they're doing that they're not really worried about the dog, because they know and they trust the dog that they have all of those skills. So we really make sure that the levels are designed so that by the time you get to those expert level skills that are very difficult, one, the dog has the strength to be able to do them safely, and two, the dog has the body awareness to be able to do it accurately and not make mistakes. And at that point, they've done so many repetitions of things at lower levels that, as I tell people when I'm doing a jump, that if I've done this jump 100 times and I've never messed up, the 101th time when there's a lot of height involved, I'm unlikely to mess up that time as well. So we really, really emphasize that skill and the ability to read your dog, because most dogs, if given the right environment and given the right training, are very, very self-aware. There's exceptions. Malinois are very good exceptions to this. that they will say, oh, no, I don't think I can actually do this. And really reading your dog and knowing when they say that and taking that to heart and going, okay, let's go on and do something else. Let's build up our strength. Let's figure out what the hole in our training was that means you can't do this. So that's a really, really important part of the sport, is we want dogs to continue to be safe and be able to practice parkour for their entire life. I have a 14-year-old dog who has been practicing parkour for 6 years now, and you wouldn't know she was 14. She can still do amazing things that amaze me. And so that's what I want, is a 14-year-old dog who still loves the sport. And yes, I don't ask her to do all of the crazy things she did 6 years ago, but she still loves the sport and is still very sound and very strong as a result of the things she's done.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and one more thing I wanted to add on the aspect of safety is we really emphasize we require dogs to be in harnesses, and if they're doing anything at height or where there's risk involved, we require them to be on leash so that we can improve their... so we can spot them, is what we call it. And it's just for the off chance something does go wrong. We can get there in there and help them. A lot of times I tell people, if I'm catching a dog entirely on a harness, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Something has gone horribly wrong, because most of the time it's simply rebalancing them as they, maybe they overshot a jump. And so I just rebalance them back to where they need to be. Most of the time I'm not using my harness at all, but every now and then something's gone wrong. I didn't notice the surface was slippery or something like that. And I just use that harness to sort of help them not get hurt in the process. So that's a skill that we practice a lot and that we really put emphasis on in the lower levels, is making sure that people have the spotting skills. We sort of force them through some of the exercises in the titles to practice those spotting skills. It's why we require them to be on leash even when they wouldn't necessarily need to be at the lower levels, simply so that people are getting the time and the hours in so that they're competent and their dog knows how to accept spotting and they know how to spot their dog effectively without getting in their way.
For sure.
Yeah. Very, very cool. So what are some of the mistakes you see people doing in video submissions when they're trying to get their title that might mean that they don't qualify?
Yeah. So some of the biggest mistakes I see, the biggest mistake by far is violations of what we call the shoulder height rule. So because jumping requires a lot of impact for dogs, especially jumping down onto a surface, we have a rule that if you're jumping onto a hard surface such as asphalt or concrete, that they can't jump down on anything higher than shoulder height without additional spotting. So without you lessening some of the impact with their harness or picking them up and setting them down. And then if it's on a soft surface, we say twice shoulder height is fine. Otherwise, they're going to need additional help. And this is one that I see, and it's usually a behavior that the dog knows fairly well, and the person's very comfortable with, and they don't realize that the dog is jumping down from a pretty high surface onto a hard surface. So that would I say is the most common error, is violations of the shoulder height rule, in that they're jumping down, say, from a table down onto a concrete patio or something like that and didn't get any additional support. And when I watch it, it makes me cringe a little bit because you can see the impact on the dog and it's not something, yes, it's fine once or twice, but it's not something I would want repeated over time, which is why we have the shoulder height rule. So that was, I say, the most common mistake that I see.
Nice. So I know there are probably quite a bit of trainers out there interested in teaching this kind of parkour class. It, you know, it doesn't require a facility. You can do it anywhere, right, in groups or private lessons even. So how does somebody start teaching these classes?
So I would say first, go out and start exploring with your own dog. If you have a dog, if not, you know, take a shelter dog or something. And it's really about seeing the different obstacles. Watch some videos. We have videos on our website. There's videos on Facebook and that kind of thing. Okay. Really read the safety rules. You know, maybe consider submitting a title yourself. Right. Also, I can vouch very much for the Fenzi Dog Sports Academy has a parkour class. They had it. First one they offered was last term. It's very, very good. Melissa Chandler, the instructor for that class, she's trained with us. She's very good, very competent. So I can give a big shout out for that class as well.
Great.
If people wanted a more structured way to get the skills. But really, it's going out and exploring your environment and getting used to what's going on while keeping safety in mind.
Yeah. And do you recommend, like, other than just reading the safety instructions online, do you recommend, you know, is there a certification or anything you need to maybe look into before you start teaching these?
So we just offered our first sort of like beta test instructor certification in January of this year. And then we're looking at sort of options for how to develop a instructor certification that's more formalized and that kind of thing based on the results of that beta test. So it's coming in the future. It isn't here right now.
Okay.
And I would say asking lots and lots of questions, going out and exploring and that kind of thing is your best option as far as getting the experience and the skills needed at this point.
Awesome.
So what are some other sources for people to go get more information about the sport?
Yeah. So the best place I would say is there's a dog parkour training Facebook group. Karen and I started that and we sort of monitor it on an off basis, but we have a bunch of very good admins who are very, very competent. And it's a great resource for if you have questions, if you want ideas for different places. People post videos and pictures of places they've been training and skills they've been working on. It's a very active group, and it's an awesome place to sort of learn all of those things. And then safety rules and that kind of thing you can find on our website would be the best place to find all of that sort of more formal, boring, dry stuff. is on our website, dogparkour.org.
Yeah, boring but very important.
Boring but very important.
Awesome. Great. And we'll have all of these links in the show notes on the moderndogtrainer.net. So stay tuned or go check it out there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Abigail.
Not a problem. It's been my pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, Kat, as well.
It's been super fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. Don't forget, you can check out the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net/podcast. You can also share your thoughts and support our podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. Until next time.